The Battle for Liberty, Episode 34.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Battle for Liberty. Once again, I'm your host, Mike Tilden. I'd like to welcome you back to the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, that really helps me out. And if you could do me one better, go ahead and tell a friend about the show. As always, you should check out the site at battleforliberty.com, you should follow me on Twitter at mybattleliberty, and you should go over to the Facebook page at Battle for Liberty. The email address, if you want to get in touch with me, as always, is mike@battleforliberty.com, and the show notes for this episode will be battleforliberty.com/34. That's the one convenient location where you can find all of the content available from this episode. All right, we are going to talk today about probably the most viral incident that happened this week, and that, of course, is the incident aboard United Airlines Flight 3411, back on Sunday, April 9th. That flight was scheduled to go from Chicago O'Hare to Louisville, Kentucky, but before they got off the ground, there was an incident with one of the passengers. What ultimately ended up happening, as I'm sure you've seen, is one of the passengers was forcibly removed from the airplane after he refused to leave voluntarily. And in typical 2017 fashion, just about everybody on the plane did what anyone today would do, and they whipped out their phone and started recording. So there's plenty of video of this incident happening. And so that's half of why this incident went so viral. There's lots of ways that you can see it happening. But the other reason that it's going as viral as it is the fact that the passenger was not removed because of his bad behavior or because of security concerns or anything related to the safety of the airplane. No, he was removed because the airline needed to make room for some of their employees who needed to get to Louisville. So when nobody volunteered to have their flight changed to a different time, the airline picked four passengers and told them that they had to be removed. Well, one of the four passengers didn't go voluntarily, and ultimately, the airline had to physically and somewhat violently remove this guy, with police officers nearby giving support and maybe taking part. So the video that you see, I'm sure most of you have seen it, and if you haven't, I'll link to it on the show notes page, but the video that you see is of a passenger screaming very loudly, almost shrieking, as these airline employees grab him out of his seat and drag him down the aisle of the airplane. And without context, it's a fairly disturbing video to watch. This guy is being manhandled, he's being forcibly removed, his shirt's coming out over his head, his glasses are coming off. At the end of it, he's all bloody from his mouth. So it's not an easy video to watch. But to make matters worse, as if that wasn't bad enough, the official statement from United Airlines was somewhat less than conciliatory. In their own statement, the first statement that came out after the incident, they said, "Flight 3411 from Chicago to Louisville was overbooked. After our team looked for volunteers, one customer refused to leave the aircraft voluntarily, and so law enforcement was asked to come to the gate." That's it. No, we're sorry. No, we handled this poorly. No, we're investigating, nothing, just here's what happened and we're fine with it. So, predictably, many people are very upset with United Airlines and how they handled the incident. Now, indeed, I'm upset about it too. I want to be very clear. I think United messed up big time. I think they messed up in how they removed the passenger, and I think they messed up on how they handled the initial fallout. I feel like this could be a lesson in how not to treat your customers. But the real reason I want to talk about this incident is that many people are taking it out of context, and they're describing circumstances that just aren't true. And perhaps more importantly, I feel like this story has provided the perfect opportunity to learn about another possibly uncomfortable reality that flows from libertarian philosophy. But before we get that deep, I think it's first important that we get the facts straight and we get some trustworthy perspective from someone who has lived this type of situation for years. So to help us better understand the facts of what happened and to cut through all the baloney that you're hearing in the mainstream media and on the internet, I've got an airline industry expert with us today. So my guest today is, I'm going to call him Captain Dave to keep his anonymity. So Captain Dave has been a commercial airline pilot for 7 years, and he's also a self-described Rothbardian voluntarist. So you gotta know I'm excited to talk to him about this one. So it's my pleasure to welcome Captain Dave to the Battle for Liberty. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for being on with me. I'm really appreciative of you taking some time. I think you're going to provide some really good perspective into this whole snafu. Now, I've summarized the facts for my listeners, the basic idea of what happened on United Airlines Flight 3411. But what I want to talk to you about and what I think you can provide for the listeners is really an intimate, in-depth, behind the industry curtain perspective here. So let's get into some of the more nuanced aspects that no one is really hearing about in the media. So what I want to ask you, first of all, is exactly what happened from the perspective of an expert in the airline industry?
Sure. What happened last night was a very normal thing to happen when you start dealing with irregular operations. For whatever reason, I'm not, it sounds to me, I actually spoke to one of the crew members that was deadheading that they had to remove a passenger for. And he said, and I'll just go ahead and read it to you. He texted me. He said, "We were scheduled to deadhead on an earlier flight operated by another regional carrier, which went down for hours for maintenance. So our scheduling department reassigned us at the last minute to this flight." So it was a last minute assignment. So United had to deadhead this crew to Louisville to be in position for a flight the next morning. So this was not planned. And that's really important that everybody understands this was not a planned event. United did not plan this oversell situation. So basically, United has two options. Either one, it can remove a couple passengers to get this deadheading crew on board and down to Louisville to be in position for the next morning. Or two, they can cancel the flight the next morning, which would have nearly, which could have as many as 76 people on board. And that would also create further problems down the line as that aircraft with the rest of the schedule the next day. So clearly, United would rather choose option one and just inconvenience a couple people to preserve the system integrity. Now, the first thing a gate agent is going to do is remove any standby passengers or any passengers that are not required to be on board for revenue or company purposes. So if none of them are on board, then they're going to begin asking people to voluntarily take a voucher and be put on the next flight, which would most likely at this point probably have been the following morning. And if there are no volunteers, then the airline is left with no choice but to remove a revenue passenger. To do this, they have to follow a certain priority. Now, a lot of these news outlets and Facebook posts, everybody's been saying these passengers were selected randomly by the computer. It's just not true. There's an actual priority that the company has to follow, and that's outlined in the contract of carriage that's available on United Airlines' website for anybody who's interested. So this is all in the fine print. United is obligated to get you where you want to go, but it's not obligated to get you on the flight that you actually booked. It's all part of the contract. So United found themselves in a tough position, but they had no choice but to remove the passenger. So the passenger is on the property of United, technically on the regional airline that was operating the flight for United, and failure to comply with a crew member instruction and the contractual obligations as part of the ticket purchase puts both parties in a really unpleasant situation. I've seen a lot of people suggesting that, the crew should have deadheaded the deadheading crew should have driven, what have you. Well, problem is they were already delaying the flight the next day because they didn't have enough rest. So we have one passenger here who's inconvenienced, really four. while other people are saying, well, they should have inconvenienced even more people down the road. So this kind of goes down to the economics in one lesson from Henry Hazlitt, where people are not acknowledging the unforeseen consequences of what they are suggesting.
That's fantastic. So you really just went through all of my questions as if we had talked about this. Listeners, I promise, we actually didn't prearrange this, but you hit everything. So since you covered it so comprehensively, I want to make sure we go back through every step of the way so that people understand exactly what went on here. And I talk about on the show a lot of times, I talk about Henry Hazlitt's One Lesson all the time, and that wasn't planned either. but first of all, a lot of people are saying, well, this is just another case of corporate greed. And I'm, from my perspective, I don't think this is a situation where there's some bald, mustached man with dollar signs in his eyeballs cackling in a high-rise office somewhere saying, oh, yes, let's screw the little people and overbook the flight. If they protest, we'll just throw them off like trash. I mean, that's not how it happened, right?
In this case, no. Now, I will say there are some flights that they do purposefully oversell, and that's because they can look at statistics and say on, you know, whatever route they're flying, they have a regular number of people that don't show up. So I don't want to.
Let's jump into that. That's really important. I was going to get to that, but since you brought it up, let's do it. Sure. What you're saying is in this particular situation, this was not actually an overbooked flight, which is really unfortunate because United Airlines' statement says that it was. It sounds to me like their PR office is just having a bad couple months, but it sounds to me like this was not an overbooked flight, but it became overbooked because of the weather delays, which meant they needed a crew, yada, yada. You've already talked about that. But let's just say it was scheduled to be overbooked because everybody knows that they do this on purpose sometimes. Why would that be? Because to some people, it seems like, oh, okay, now I've got them nailed. I've got the evil, greedy corporation nailed. This has to be corporate greed, right? What's wrong with that?
Well, there's several things wrong. I mean, if you are always booking fewer than the number of available seats, you're giving away profit. And you know, these are decisions that the airline management has to make. And I'm an airline pilot. I have plenty of complaints about airline management pretty much across the board. So I'm not really going to be one to normally defend them. But the bottom line is their job is to make money. So if they start booking fewer people and they're not actually booking the full number of seats on the flight because, you know, they want to leave fudge factor for deadheading crew members or what have you, that's going to raise the cost for every other passenger. Now, if they book exactly the number of seats that are sold on the flight, well, kind of a similar thing, you know, they will raise the cost to every other passenger slightly, perhaps. But then they still run the risk of having to kick people off if they need to position crew members for whatever reason. And through whatever algorithms and however they figure these staffing models out or the selling models out, on some routes they have figured that they can get the most money, the highest efficiency, by overselling by a couple of seats. Realizing that they're going to lose that gamble sometimes, but not every time. So, you know, I don't want to get too much into the business side of it just because I'm not an expert in that area. However, I understand that these are decisions they have to make, and it does make it hard on the gate agents, hard on some passengers. As part of a purchase agreement, people do need to understand that this is a possibility, that just because you have a confirmed seat on a flight doesn't necessarily mean you're home free.
Sure. So if I understand what you're saying, you know, basically what you're saying is that the airline, it just all came down to a tough decision that they had to make. They had to decide who were they going to inconvenience. Were they going to inconvenience four people from one flight, or were they going to inconvenience, 76 people on a flight the next day, right?
That is correct.
Right. And so if they decide that removing the, not to be insulting to these people, but removing their bottom tier passengers from the airplane, if they decide that's the best way to go, what you're telling me is that's within their contractual rights that they've contracted with these passengers, correct?
Yes, that is within their contractual rights under Rule
21 of the contract of carriage for anybody who is interested in doing that, into looking at that.
Fascinating. Okay. Well, that's all good information to have. And I guess I just want to go back to one quick point, and you made the point a little bit earlier that one of the reasons that they might purposefully oversell is because airlines, like any other company, they're in the business to make money. And unfortunately, what some people hear when they hear, well, they're in the business to make money, what they interpret that as all they care about is profit for themselves. But what they're missing is the other side. And that is that when companies maximize their efficiency, it tends to drive prices down for the consumer. And I think you did a great job in explaining how that is. I mean, if all of the seats on the airplane are always booked and in exactly the number of seats there are, then what happens when there's bad weather and they have to shuffle crew around, right?
Yeah, and it's part of the cost of doing business, and they understand that. Now, one thing I do want to add here is United, certainly the last couple of weeks, has been taking a lot of flack in the public relations department. But these are not policies that are unique to United Airlines. These are policies that are common with Delta, American, all these other carriers. United really just seems to have a string of bad luck. So I always laugh when people say, well, I'm never going to fly your airline again. Okay, but that's not the root of the problem. And there are plenty of problems that we can discuss, and we can debate whether or not this is a good business model. You know, maybe some people would rather pay higher fares and not have to deal with this and just say, no, we want more seats, and, you know, we want you to fly around with empty seats every day. I don't think that's really going to go anywhere. But this is the business model that's in place around the country.
Fascinating. I'm glad you brought that up. It's a perfect transition, because I also wanted to talk about regulation. See, many devout statists, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, is completely irrelevant. A statist is a statist. Mm-hmm. Many statists will be using this incident in particular to clamor on and on and on about how what we really need is more government intervention and more regulation. Because, you know, greedy companies like United Airlines, they shouldn't be allowed to oversell in the first place. So why don't we just pass a law that'll fix the problem? What's wrong with that line of reasoning?
Well, the irony of that is government, here's the problem in the first place. United was within their contractual rights to do this. And again, we can talk about whether or not it was a good business practice. But the government, United was basically forced to call the government, called local cops, to have them remove this passenger. Now, the cops were the one that injured this individual. I would imagine that a private police force would have been able to handle this better somehow. And I'm not in the business of security and police, but, you know, I have faith that they would have been able to do it without making the guy a bloody mess. As far as more government regulation of United, that's fine. If they want, okay, if let's say the statists want to do that, they're going to be the ones that are driving costs up for everybody. And the airline industry is already one of the most heavily regulated industries. Believe it or not, in some ways, it's not as bad as it was back before the 70s. But still, everything that we do is micromanaged, which ultimately drives the cost up for everyone. So the consumer loses. And trust me, airlines don't want to lose an airplane. So I think it's a stretch to say that we are safer because of the regulation. I really do believe that the industry would get where it is and probably even beyond where it is without the government holding it back.
Yeah, well, I can't disagree with you in anything that you said there. But specifically going back to something that you hit on, in terms of regulation, one of the things I want to make sure that is crystal clear to the listeners is for anyone who thinks more regulation is the answer, I want to ask you, with all the regulation that exists now, what do you think the chances are of a startup airline competing with someone like United or American or Delta or even the regional carriers? Because the regional carriers, they might be smaller, but they're still gigantic companies. What do you think the chances are of some small startup airline saying, we have a better way to do it, let's go ahead and compete? Do you think that's even on the radar?
No, it's not. If you look at all the airlines that are in place today, there are operating certificates, because an airline is an operating certificate certified under Part 121 of the regulations. And these are all certificates that were really created long ago and through various bankruptcies and whatever. where these certificates have been bought. Airline was very costly because it's cost prohibitive to create this very laborious process or to go through the process to have to become a certified airline, basically. And without that, it is illegal to sell your services for hire as an airline. So the government prohibits that. Now, one of the things I like to talk about when discussing this is how would this look in a free market? There would still be regulation, but it would be self-regulation. I would suggest that it could be the Airlines for America. The Airlines for America Association could say, these are the standards you have to meet to be an airline of our organization. You can even have competing accreditation organizations. And you would still get a free market push for safety and standards across the industry. And I do think that standards are important as a pilot, because it does make the job safer, but I think it could be so much done so much better and more efficiently in a free market.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I work in a very, very heavily regulated industry as well, probably as much as the airline industry. And one of my coworkers and I recently got into a debate, and it was a very friendly debate, but she was defending the regulatory agency that inspects us and audits us and does all that kind of stuff. And I was explaining to her, I said, you realize we have an entire floor of employees, not just a cubicle farm, but an entire floor worth of employees who their entire job is to make sure that we are following regulations and audit preparedness and all that kind of stuff. And she said, well, but that helps keep us and our customers safe. And I looked at her and I said, okay, I'm gonna ask you one hypothetical. If the regulatory agency went away tomorrow, do you think our company would all of a sudden start making products that are unsafe? And she said, well, of course not. And I said, well, why wouldn't we? And she goes, well, I know the people who work here, they care about our customers, they care about their well-being, and at the end of the day, we want to have jobs. So we have and I looked at her and I said, that's my argument for doing away with the regulatory agency. And she kind of looked at me with this blank stare, and she didn't have anything to say. And like I said, she's a sweet lady. I really enjoy working with her. I think it was the first time anyone had ever pressed her. And I think whether it's my industry or the airline industry that you work in, the argument is the same.
It is the same. Absolutely. I run into the same issue, and this is getting a little bit off of the topic that we're talking about, but one of the hot button issues right now in the aviation industry is the federal government has authorized Norwegian Airlines to operate here, based out of Boston and Fort Lauderdale, to operate nonstop flights to Europe. And the unions, and I'm part of the union, they're fighting this tooth and nail along with the airline managements because they do not want the competition from foreign carriers. It's kind of complicated, but bottom line is a foreign company cannot own a domestic a U.S. airline. And for them to be operating out of here, they would argue is the way they're doing it is getting around the intent of the law. And my response to these people is always, why is it better to prohibit people from operating freely? If we claim to be the land of the free, which I think is a stretch in this day and age, why would we not allow them to do it? And they said, well, it's going to kill our jobs and everything. And I said, well, I don't know that I really want my job to be protected by the government. And, you know, because in a free market, maybe I would be paid less and I'd be okay with that. But it's just this hodgepodge of regulation that suppresses the free market. It suppresses innovative ways to figure out how to do things. And ultimately, the consumer is always going to pay the cost.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it. I mean, I couldn't help but think while you were telling that story about the foreign airliners and what objections the unions might have, I couldn't help but think of the automotive industry. And I'm sitting here thinking, my God, the last thing in the world I want is the American Airlines, and I don't mean American as an airline, but the airlines based in America, to be protected the way GM was. I mean, look what happened to GM. I don't want that.
Of course not.
I think we're going to, just like GM, we would the result would be a far worse product, possibly less safe, although I can't really make that claim. I'm not sure, but that's a possibility. What do you think?
Well, in the airline industry, my question is, why is it bad that somebody can go to Europe for $70 if another company can make money doing that? It sounds to me like they've found a good business model.
Yeah.
Now, I will say there are some valid arguments in saying, okay, well, but the Norwegian government is subsidizing them and so on and so forth, so it's not really a fair playing field. I get that, but the bottom line is, if somebody else wants to pay for it, you know, who is an American taxpayer to ban someone else from operating?
Well, that's a question for another day, unfortunately.
Indeed. Sorry.
I think it's a fantastic one, and I think it's right on topic, but I think that would take us down the rabbit hole, especially knowing that you and I align on so much. We could possibly lose a few listeners to some snoring. So we'll save that for another day. Now, before I let you go, I always like to get a sense for how my guests became libertarians. As this is the battle for liberty, I always ask all of my guests about how they battle for liberty. So how did you come to hold libertarian beliefs?
Well, it started out as I came from the right, like many of our peers, and as a Republican, certainly a neoconservative. I would say I feel like I was maybe a little bit more grounded in the so-called limited government idea, in that, you know, when I would take the online quizzes, it always showed up libertarian, and that really concerned me because libertarian sounded a little bit more like liberal to me. And that really concerned me from a young age, and I could never figure out why it kept showing up that way. Well, eventually in college, I started to learn what that meant, what a libertarian is, and I was a minarchist. But eventually I found that I could not consistently apply my principles and accept the monopoly of the state. And through that, I found voluntarism and believe that that is the most consistent application of free market principles.
Well, it sounds like you and I had a very similar path. That's almost word for word how I came to libertarianism. So that's great. That's excellent. I think it's interesting for my listeners to hear how various different guests found their way to the liberty movement, because I think I do have a pretty decent listener base who would share your experience and my experience, and we're all in a kind of a different stage of learning about the principles of liberty. So it's great to hear someone like you who works in the industry that you work in with a similar story to tell. So is there anything else I'm missing from this airline story? Anything else we need to discuss before we're done?
Well, the one other thing we did bring up that I think might be worth talking about just based on the current events was the recent issue with United Airlines and the dress code.
Oh yeah, the leggings.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, we're recording this on April 10th, and this was a couple weeks ago, there were two girls that were denied boarding to a United Airlines flight. Well, there was an onlooker that was just appalled by this. So she took to Twitter, she took to her blog, and she was just going off about how United is sexualizing these girls and, all these terrible things. But what this woman didn't realize was that these teen girls were they're called pass riders. They were eligible pass riders. I believe they were the daughters of a United employee. And so they were flying for free, just as a benefit of this other individual's employment. Well, I pulled up the dress code here, and it says the following attire is unacceptable in any cabin and is not limited to attire. Let's see, form fitting, lycra, spandex tops, pants, and dresses. And they were wearing leggings, and that's not allowed. And so, what's been so interesting is to see all these people in society going off about how United is terrible because they're not letting these people have their freedom to wear whatever they want on the airplane. And that's just not true. So I thought that was interesting to bring up, just given just all the bad publicity that United has been getting, I think unfairly.
Yeah, well, it plays perfectly, though, into the theme that's developing here, and that is that Whenever something like this happens, when something goes viral, it's really important to get the full story, right? Because you can see a story of a person getting kicked off a plane and you can be upset. And you can see two young ladies be asked to change and you can be upset. But it's only when you get the full context, the full story, get all the details, and then on top of everything else, apply these consistent principles that you really understand who is the property owner, who's in the right, who has the authority to make these rules. And in both cases, United Airlines was the property owner. You know, these girls do not have a right to the seat on the plane. They've merely contracted for that. Same thing with this passenger who was forcibly removed. He doesn't have a right to that seat. He's purchased
beyond
it.
Beyond the limits of the contract of carriage.
Sure, but and correct me if you think I'm wrong here. Far be it from me to think I'm right all the time, but the way I think of it is, even if you contract with someone to rent or lease part of their property for a certain period of time, that doesn't make it your property. And if the property owner ultimately wants to violate that contract, they can, and then you're entitled to damages. Would that be correct?
I would say that's absolutely correct, and that would still be subject to the terms of the agreement for breach of contract.
Correct. Exactly. And that's what people don't ever think about. I mean, there was a hilarious South Park episode that's unfortunately not fit for my audience that went into all the kind of funny, hilarious things that could happen when people don't read the terms of their contract, like, you know, the Apple terms of service. Every time there's a new iOS or a new app or whatever, they always say, "Do you agree?" And of course, everyone just says, "Well, yes, I agree. Give me the latest app. I don't really care what the agreement is." So all of this is just to go to say that it's all there. It's all a contract that you've agreed to. And at the end of the day, United's following their contract. And as you've said several times, we can quabble over whether or not from a business perspective, United Airlines made some mistakes. And I think they did. I absolutely think they handled the situation poorly. But that does not mean that it was illegal. It does not mean that they were, profiling. It does not mean that they were marginalizing protected classes. None of that is true. It's simply, I think, from a business perspective, maybe it could have been handled a little better. But I think we'll go into that another day. I think we've covered this thoroughly from top to bottom. Hopefully, my listeners have gotten a good idea of some of the inner workings of how the airline industry works. I want to thank you just one more time, our friend and pilot, Dave, for coming on the show and taking time out of your busy schedule. I know when you do get time off, it's precious, and you've spent about a half an hour with us, and we really value that greatly. You're going to be my go-to airline guy. I hope that's all right. You know, when we've got airlines in the news, I may be calling on you again, if that's all right.
Well, I'd be happy to help out.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Mike, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. All right. So let's think this all through one more time and wrap this up nicely. First and foremost, commercial airplanes are the property of the company that owns them. You, as an individual, have zero ownership of that property. So when you buy a ticket, you're essentially entering into a contract with that airline that states that you have access to a particular seat on the airplane in exchange for an agreed-upon price. But there are additional terms to that contract, terms that I'll admit nobody actually reads. But one of those terms is that the airline can remove passengers from the airplane under certain circumstances. Now, if the airline removes you and then fails to compensate you according to the contract, well, then they've breached the contract and you would be entitled to some sort of recourse, possibly to some monetary damages. But one thing you are absolutely not entitled to is that seat on that airplane. It's not yours. Another thing you absolutely can't do is shriek like a banshee, act like a three-year-old, go limp, and have to be dragged off of a plane, and then act as though you bear absolutely no responsibility. See, this is yet another uncomfortable conclusion that must be drawn from basic libertarian property rights. See, what I hope you understand is that if you want to live in a society where, say, a baker has the right to say no, I will not bake the Holocaust celebration cake for the Neo-Nazi Party of America. Or, no, I will not participate in the wedding ceremony that is antithetical to my religious beliefs. And if you believe that the government shouldn't be able to force you to go against those stances, then you must also believe in voluntary association. And along with voluntary association comes the reality that private property owners, like United Airlines, are permitted to operate their companies and their airlines and modify seat assignments according to whatever agreement they've made with their passengers, regardless of whether or not it offends you as a consumer. But here's the beautiful aspect of the unmolested free market. If you disagree with the way United Airlines handled this incident, then you have an obvious choice. Simply choose not to do business with them. There are plenty of other airlines out there, and they all want your business. They want it desperately. And what's even better is that the absolute fastest way for a company to amend its policies and start treating customers better is to feel this harsh sting of falling profits. This alone is the efficient way to regulate company practices and customer service. Anyone who thinks the government can pass a law and fix this is fooling themselves. If you need any proof of that, tell me what it is you're going to do the next time you have a bad experience at the post office, or the DMV, or a courthouse. See, since those organizations are state-run monopolies, you have no alternative. And because they have no profit motive, nobody cares about your bad experience. It's impossible to hurt them. But in contrast, take a look at what has happened to the stock price of United Airlines. It has taken a huge hit because of this. So the feedback is already coming in, and United Airlines will be changing its practices. This type of turnaround is lightning fast compared to the excruciatingly slow and inefficient processes that are put in place by government regulators. But before you go thinking that I'm a heartless bastard who only cares about my precious property rights, I want to clarify one more time that while I support United Airlines in its legal ability to remove anyone they want from their property, from a business perspective, I think they choked majorly. I think it's obvious that this is a huge blunder for them. If it had been up to me, if it was Tilden Airlines, well, my policy would have been that in this type of situation, just keep sweetening the deal until a passenger feels that he or she is getting something better. So you up the amount of the voucher, you up the free airfare, you throw in passes to the elite lounges, you give them an upgrade, something. Do whatever you have to do to keep the customer happy. And in this way, you can save your stock price by avoiding the PR nightmare in which United Airlines now finds itself. So from both a customer service perspective and from an economic perspective, I think United made the wrong call. 100% they did the wrong thing. But I still want to live in a free society where they are permitted to make that mistake and then suffer the consequences of that mistake. I hope that clears it up for you. I hope that clarifies things. I feel it's very important to understand this issue because it touches on so many things related to libertarianism, libertarian philosophy, property rights, and that sort of thing. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and please refer that friend. Do me another favor, go give me a positive review in iTunes. That will really help me get the podcast to the top of the search results. And don't forget, if you have suggestions for guests or show topics, send them my way at battleforliberty.com/contact. In the meantime, don't ever stop spreading the word about the battle for liberty. Until next time, battle on.